Negro Mania by John Campbell, Part 3. Lower Egypt and the Delta would naturally be the region most suited to agriculture, and contrary again to the general current of opinion, it was here that the earliest Egyptians settled. It was here that the most ancient cities arose, and here that the most ancient monumental piles still remain, to attest the correctness of the assertion. The erection, in Lower Egypt, of the most ancient monuments we encounter does not at all impede the migration of the Caucasian race at a very early period into the Thebaid, or even as far as Meroe, nor is the inferior relative antiquity of those vast edifices that proudly demand, for Thebes and the Thebaid, an age nearly parallel to those of Lower Egypt, devoid of explanation on other grounds. But it is an indisputable fact, since the application of the Champollion tests to any of the ruins in the Nilotic Valley, that the most ancient vestiges preserved to us lie north, and the earliest extant are the Memphite pyramids, while those found to the southward are comparatively more recent, with the doubtful exception of the pyramids of Meroe in Ethiopia, which will be attended to in due course. In the interval previous to the accession of Menes, and subsequent to the dispersion of mankind from Shinar, must that wandering tribe of Caucasians, who settled permanently in the valley of the Nile, have entered Egypt from Asia. And although we possess not the slightest account of the time, beyond that of its occurrence between Noah and Abraham, and none of the mode in which this march must have taken place, from Assyria into Egypt, yet the fact of the Asiatic origin and Caucasian race of the early Egyptians being declared in the Bible and proved by anatomy with monumental and historical corroborations, it may be desirable to inquire how far geographical facilities smoothed their path and whether topographical circumstances in connection with localities in Egypt admit of and confirm their introduction. According to the facts set forth in Morton's Crania Egyptica, we find the Caucasians occupying Egypt at the remotest time we can descry, and any errors unintentionally committed in speculating upon the road they took from the Asiatic continent to Egypt will not affect the fact of their journey. Whether their progress was slow, such as a pastoral people, we may infer they were at that primeval time, encumbered with families and flocks, would necessarily adopt, or whether it was the rapid march of men driven by political convulsions or family feuds to seek safety in countries remote from their first origin, are questions in themselves hypothetical, though the former speculation has most of probability. Whether their migration from east to west was anterior or posterior to the dispersion of Babel, I leave others to determine. In either case, we may recognize the all-wise hand of Providence, accomplishing by natural instruments and according to immutable organic laws the object of man's creation. Whether, prior to their entry, they possessed any information concerning the fertility and salubrity of that smiling valley land, whereon the sacred Nile, by its periodical inundations, spreads its rich alluvium, must ever remain doubtful. That they had their women with them is certain, as they preserved their blood, pure and intact from amalgamation with African aborigines, excepting in partial instances of much later times, proceeding from very natural causes and affecting mainly those provinces which were adjacent to these Africans. But no more influencing the mass of population in Lower and Middle Egypt at any period than is apparent or usual, as I have before remarked, with the present Fellah and Arab inhabitants of these districts at this day. The simplest view of the case would lead one to infer that in proportion as the increase of human and animal population rendered the area of Assyria too limited for the peaceful attainment of a sufficiency of food, small parties, offsets from the patriarchal tree, wandered like the Bedouins of the present day, pasturing their cattle in search of forage along the valleys of Palestine. The vanguard of these nomads pushed forward constantly by the advance of later separations from the main body, or induced by other contingencies, which we may conjecture but cannot define, crossed the small desert, which even at the present day in winter offers every facility for similar migrations, and they reached the valley of the Nile somewhere in the vicinity of Pelusium. Once in the land of Goshen, it may be readily imagined, whoever came the first would not be long in inviting his friends and relations to join him, and to sojourn permanently in what must have been to a herdsman, as it is the present day to the agriculturist, a terrestrial paradise. Similar causes always produce similar effects. Population increased and migration continued until every atom of the then alluvial soil between the deserts of Suez and of Libya, and from the sea beach to that extreme point where an African climate becomes mortiferous to the white man, which region commences about the 16th degree of latitude in Ethiopia above Egypt, was colonized by the Asiatic Caucasians, and in those remote countries by their intermixed descendants. As population increased, the herdsman was forced, by interest and want of pasture room, to become a farmer, and the first spade struck into the yielding black mud of the receding Nile, which was the first step towards that civilization and power which for 2,000 years made Egypt the greatest country of the earth. I deem it requisite only to allude to the prevalent but erroneous notion of the African origin of the ancient Egyptians, insofar as to express my disbelief of the possibility that the Caucasian route from Asia to Egypt could have lain in those primeval times across the Red Sea at the Straits of Bab el-Mandeb or higher up. Let anyone look at the map and measure the distance from Assyria to Meroe by that road, let him pause and consider the vast geographical obstructions to be encountered in Arabia, the time it would take to overcome them, and then let him consider the little chronological space we have for the events that occurred in Egypt between Mizraim and Abraham, and allow that without overthrowing scripture, this doctrine cannot be maintained. From Assyria and the plains of Shinar, even at this day, aside from human insurmountable difficulties, the journey through Arabia, across the Red Sea into Abyssinia, over the deserts of Kataref to Meroe, and thence down to the Nile, 1,600 miles to Lower Egypt and the seaboard, would be almost impossible to a family accompanied by children and by flocks. It may be objected that this migration was not immediate, but may have occupied ages. In that case, my reply is that their journey must have been rapid and accomplished within a few years, or we must reject even the Septuagint chronology as insufficient. To pass over the Red Sea with flocks and large family encumbrances implies vessels. Whence could they obtain timber on the western Arabian coast? How procure materials for naval construction and outfit in those primeval times? A mere glance at the map of Abyssinia will present obstacles after their superstitious arrival on the western shore of the Red Sea to render their progress towards Meroe and Ethiopia anything but desirable. Nor is there any point whereon the advocates of the African theory can hang a reasonable hypothesis, since the results obtained by Dr. Morton and detailed in his Crania Egyptica, Asiatic in their origin, springing from the same stock as Shem and Japhet, and Caucasian in their osteological conformation, The Egyptians were white men, of no darker hue than a pure Arab, a Jew, or a Phoenician, and it is quite as justifiable and equally reasonable to draw the dusky and the sable inhabitants of Africa from Shem, the type of the Hebrews and the Arabs, or from Japhet, the type of the Europeans, as to derive the Berbers and the Negroes from Ham, whom Scripture tells us was the parent of the Egyptians. And as such, Ham must have been an Asiatic and Caucasian, since we know positively that his Egyptian descendants were Caucasians, as pure-blooded in origin as ourselves. The climate of Egypt will never change a Caucasian into a Negro, a black into a white man, and we have yet to learn what effect climate may have had in every other latitude on the physical organization of man, on the material variation of his hair and skin, or on his osteological and craniological conformation. How the real African aborigines, the Berbers and the Negroes, were disseminated over Ethiopia and Nigritia is foreign to my discourse, nor do I presume to offer an hypothesis. It does not seem possible, although the men are excellent swimmers, that they, and still less their females and children, swam across the Red Sea. And if it be necessary to import these African races from the Asiatic hive, the same reasons which render the Isthmus of Suez the route the most natural to the Caucasian children of Ham may likewise have served for the ancestors of the Berbers and the Negroes. Equally unnecessary does it seem to speculate whether Egypt was inhabited by any or by what tribe of man at the period of Mizraim's immigration, because such a speculation would imply the possibility of the existence of other people at the time of Noah's descent from the ark, a supposition hitherto irreconcilable with all we learn from Scripture. These are problems still insoluble by human reason. Their results, such as are developed to us, point out the miraculous ordinations of the Creator, without unfolding his inscrutable ways, and I again repeat, there is no more biblical reason or authority to derive the Negroes from Ham than from Shem or Japhet. And if climate is to have affected the change, the same causes must have produced the same effects, operating on the same physical principles, so that it is just as probable that the Caucasian Shem or the Caucasian Japhet was the parent of African races as the Caucasian Ham, whose children, the Egyptians, were like their father and his blood brothers, Asiatics and Caucasians. Finally, it seems more natural that a tribe coming from Asia and adopting Egypt as its resting place should have entered that country by the route which, from the earliest times, has been the high road of nations between the Asiatic and African continents. It was by the Isthmus of Suez that the Hyksos, the Scythian shepherd kings of remote antiquity, came and were expelled. This Isthmus was likewise the beaten road of the Hebrews from Abraham to the Exodus, as it is at the present day between Jerusalem and Egypt. It served the Egyptians under the Pharaohs and the Ptolemies as the route for their military expeditions and for all commercial intercourse with Asia. The Persians, under Cambyses and Artaxerxes, Ochus, Alexander with his Macedonian phalanx, the Saracens under Aymer, and the Ottomans under Sultan Selim, used it as their undeviating highway into and out of Egypt, while from the most ancient post-diluvian period to the present hour, it has afforded, and will continue to afford, the same facilities between Asia and Africa that induced me to select it as the route of the Caucasian family of Mizraim. An important confirmation of the Asiatic origin of the Egyptians, and indeed of all the views herein put forward, is to be derived from the results established by the learned ethnographer, philologist, and critical hierologist, Dr. Lepsius, who has proved the affinities between the Indo-Germanic, Semitic, and Coptic languages to be identical, proceeding from their common origin in one primeval source. This discovery puts the seal of authenticity, even as to language, upon the Asiatic origin of the early Egyptians, while it goes far to explain all Coptic linguistical affinities with Hebrew, Arabic, Sanskrit, and other Asiatic tongues. First, because it was in Lower Egypt that the Caucasian children of Ham must have first settled on their arrival from Asia. Second, because the advocates of the theory, which would assert the African origin of the Egyptians, say they rely chiefly on history for their African or Ethiopian predilections. Third, because the same theorists assume that we must begin with Africans at the top of the Nile and come downwards with civilization, instead of commencing with Asiatics and white men at the bottom and carrying it up. I have not as yet touched on ethnography, the effects of climate, and the antiquity of the different races of the human family, but I shall come to those subjects after establishing a chronological standard by defining the history of Egypt according to the hieroglyphics. At present, I intend merely to sketch the events connected with the Caucasian children of Ham, the Asiatic, on the first establishment of their Egyptian monarchy and the foundation of their first and greatest metropolis in Lower Egypt. The African theories are based upon no critical examination of early history, are founded on no scriptural authority for early migrations, are supported by no monumental evidence or hieroglyphical data, and cannot be borne out or admitted by practical common sense. For civilization that never came northward out of benighted Africa, but from the deluge to the present moment has been carried but partially into it, to sink into upper oblivion among the barbarous races whom Providence created to inhabit the Ethiopian and Nigritian territories of that vast continent, could not spring from Negroes or from Berbers, and it never did. So far, then, as the record, scriptural, historical, and monumental, will afford us an insight into the early progress of the human race in Egypt, the most ancient of all civilized countries. We may safely assert that history, when analysed by common sense, when scrutinised by the application of the experience bequeathed to us by our forefathers, when subjected to a strictly impartial examination into and comparison of the physical and mental capabilities of nations, when distilled in the alembic of chronology and submitted to the touchstone of hieroglyphical tests, will not support that superannuated but untenable doctrine that civilization originated in Ethiopia and consequently among an African people, and was by them brought down the Nile to enlighten the less polished and therefore inferior Caucasian children of Noah, the white Asiatics, or that we, who trace back to Egypt the origin of every art and science known in antiquity, have to thank the sable Negro or the dusky Berber for the first gleams of knowledge and invention. We may therefore conclude with the observation that if civilization, instead of going from north to south, came, contrary, as shown before, to the annals of the earliest historians and all monumental facts, down the sacred Nile to illumine our darkness, and if the Ethiopic origin of arts and sciences, with social, moral, and religious institutions, were in other respects possible, these African theoretic conclusions would form a most astounding exception to the ordinations of Providence and the organic laws of nature, otherwise so undeviating throughout all the generations of man's history since the flood. It is indeed sufficient to glance one's eye at the plates of the sculptures from the Ethiopian pyramids to see that there is nothing African in the character of the human faces, and that, be they who they may, these people were not and did not desire to be considered Africans, whether of the Berber or the Negro branches. Whence already we begin to infer that the builders of these Ethiopian pyramids were not aborigines of that country, but of a race foreign to Africa, and generally speaking, at that remote period, unmixed with African blood. Unless born in Ethiopia, they must have come originally from some other region. Who can they be? Now it is but reasonable to claim that if in arts, sciences, customs, religion, colour and physiological conformation, these people of Meroe are the same people as the Egyptians, and we prove the Egyptians to have been Asiatic in origin and Caucasian in race and white men in colour, the people of Meroe must have been Asiatics, Caucasians and white men also. This was precisely the case, and for the Egyptian side of the question, I need not recapitulate the account of Mizraim's migration into the valley of the Nile, but refer to Morton's Crania Egyptica for incontrovertible evidence. The question, in regard to the priority of erection between the pyramids of Meroe and those of Memphis, merges into the still more interesting fact of their having been built by the same race of men who are not Africans, but Caucasians. This will at once explain the cause of the superiority of the inhabitants of Meroe over all African aborigines, and the reason why the Egyptians looked upon them as brethren and friends, never stigmatizing them by the contemptuous title of Gentiles or impure foreigners, as they designated Asiatic and European nations, and never applying to the people of Meroe the reproach of belonging to the, quote, perverse race of Cush. Not Cush, the son of Ham, close quote, by which name the Egyptians exclusively designated the Negro and the Berber races in hieroglyphics. We shall come to these facts in due course. This view can be sustained by the whole chain of monumental and other history. It will account for all the conflicting traditionary legends that would make Meroe the parent of Egyptian civilization, or Ethiopia the cradle of the Egyptian people. It will explain the intimacy and alliance subsisting at every period between Egypt and Meroe, the parity in religion, identity in usages and institutions, similarity in language, writing and buildings. I would therefore offer, as an improved hypothesis, that the children of Ham, on leaving Asia and settling in the valley of the Nile, colonized first Lower Egypt and then all the alluvial soil from the delta to the confines of Nigritia, wherein they did not penetrate for permanent establishment for the identical reason that white men cannot do so at the present time. The climate, which in Central Africa is mortiferous to the Caucasian. It does not change his skin, hair, facial angle, or his osteology. It kills him outright if he crosses a certain latitude. Of course, here and there, an exception may be instanced where white men have crossed the, to their race, deadly miasmata of Central Africa, but these exceptions are so rare that they fortify the rule. Witness the late Niger expedition. Witness the graveyard that Africa has been to the most enterprising travellers. Witness the fruitless attempts of Muhammad Ali to send expeditions but a few hundred miles beyond Khartoum. The Caucasian children of Ham proceeded up the Nile in a natural course of migration and settlement from Lower Egypt as far as Meroe, and probably there, although it would seem likely in later times, met Indo-Arabian Caucasians, with whom they mixed and formed one people.